Highbridge Audio presents The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey by Gabrielle Zevin. Read by Scott Brick. Original material copyright 2014 Gabrielle Zevin. Recorded by arrangement with Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill, a division of Workman Publishing Company, Incorporated. Recording copyright 2014 Highbridge Company. Part 1. Lamb to the Slaughter, 1953, Roald Dahl. Wife kills husband with frozen leg of lamb, then disposes of the weapon by feeding it to the cops. Serviceable enough, Dahl offering, though Lambiers questioned whether a professional housewife could successfully cook a leg of lamb in the manner described, i.e., without thawing, seasoning, or marinade. Wouldn't this result in tough, unevenly cooked meat? My business isn't cooking or crime, but if you dispute this detail, the whole story begins to unravel. Despite this reservation, it makes the cut because of a girl I know who loved James and the Giant Peach once upon a time. AJF. On the ferry from Hyannis to Ellis Island, Amelia Lohman paints her nails yellow and, while waiting for them to dry, skims her predecessor's notes. Island Books, approximately $350,000 per annum in sales, the better portion of that in the summer months to folks on holiday, Harvey Rhodes reports. 600 square feet of selling space, no full-time employees other than owner, very small children's section, fledgling online presence, poor community outreach. Inventory emphasizes the literary, which is good for us, but Fickrey's tastes are very specific, and without Nick, he can't be counted on to hand sell. Luckily for him, Island's the only game in town. Amelia yawns. She's nursing a slight hangover, and wonders if one persnickety little bookstore would be worth such a long trip. By the time her nails have hardened, her relentlessly bright-sided nature is kicked in. Of course it's worth it. Her specialty is persnickety little bookstores and the particular breed that runs them. Her talents also include multitasking, selecting the right wine at dinner, and the coordinating skill, tending friends who've had too much to drink, house plants, strays, and other lost causes. As she steps off the ferry, her phone rings. She doesn't recognize the number. None of her friends use their phones as phones anymore. Still, she is glad for the diversion, and she doesn't want to become the kind of person who thinks that good news can only come from calls one was already expecting and callers one already knows. The caller turns out to be Boyd Flanagan, her third online dating failure, who had taken her to the circus about 6 months ago. "I tried sending you a message a few weeks ago," he says. "Did you get it?" She tells him that she recently switched jobs, so her devices have been screwed up. "Also, I've been rethinking the whole idea of online dating, like whether it's really for me." Boyd doesn't seem to hear that last part. "Would you want to go out again?" he asks. Re their date. For a time, the novelty of the circus had distracted from the fact that they had nothing in common. By the end of dinner, the greater truth of their incompatibility had been revealed. Perhaps it should have been obvious from their inability to reach consensus on an appetizer, or from his main course admission that he disliked old things. Antiques, houses, dogs, people. Still, Amelia had not allowed herself to be certain until dessert, when she'd asked him about the book that had had the greatest influence on his life, and he'd replied, "Principles of Accounting, Part 2. Gently, she tells him no, she would rather not go out again. She can hear Boyd breathing, fluttery and irregular. She worries that he might be crying. "Are you all right?" she asks. "Don't patronize me." Amelia knows she should hang out, but she doesn't. Some part of her wants the story. What is the point of bad dates if not to have amusing anecdotes for your friends?